is Hour 1 of Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition, broadcasting from the Wormabago Mobile Studios in the murky depths of Bootleg Bog, where even the plants are carnivorous. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone, and with me, by way of amazing fiend phone satellite internet technology, is Brett from the School Sucks Project. Brett, hey, welcome to the weekend edition of Freedom Fiends, brother.
Hey, Ben, so good to be on with you again. It's been like more than a year since we've talked, so thanks for reaching out. I'm excited about today's show.
Yeah, and we did. If listeners you want to hear that, get over to the School Sucks Project.com, and you can just look through the archives there, and you can find last time that Brett and I did a show together. That was on the School Sucks podcast, and I highly recommend the School Sucks podcast. Boy, I'm tripping on my words today. And Brett's put a lot of
effort. Call it the School Sucks Project, so maybe that's part of the confusion. The website is SchoolSucksProject.com, so that could be the source.
Or it could just be my tongue. Just to quote Bill Murray, I don't think it's the cough syrup as much as all the... No, I blew the line. He says, I don't think it's the speed as all the cough syrup I drank.
For the CIA wiretaps, anything we advocate which is illegal, immoral, or fattening should be interpreted to be satire, meaning its opposite.
So one of the things that I wanted to have Brett on the show and talk about was a show that Brett did a long time ago where he explored the idea of these different conspiracy theories involving the moon landings. And, you know, the very first time that I encountered someone who said that the moon landings were fake, and I shouldn't say very first time, because the very first person that I heard say that the moon landings were fake was my grandmother, and that was the week of Apollo 11's touchdown on the moon. She told me, she was watching on TV with us, and she said, that whole thing's fake. They didn't do that. That's all in some movie studio. And I thought, they can't do that. This is on television. It has to be real. You know, but it put a little seed of doubt in my mind, and I started thinking even then, like, wait a minute, how did they get that camera angle? Where's the camera at to take that shot? And things like that started, even as a kid, things like that started to strike me. So then I didn't think about it for years and years and years. And then as an adult, I was reintroduced to this idea of the possibility of a fake moon landing and the faked, you know, the whole thing faked. And I thought, yeah, no, that is not even something to waste a moment of my time thinking about. But then I kept bumping into this crazy notion, and I really wished that I could find somebody who covered it in an interesting way and with a little bit of thought, not totally sold on the idea and not totally trying to just make fun of it and bash it. And that's when I found Brett's work on this specific topic. And I really want to encourage anybody who right now is not thinking I'm crazy, just to have something to think about. And for no other reason, just for a talking topic with other people, get over to the School Sucks Project and download the episode where Brett goes into depth and looks at this, at all the conspiracy theories involving the moon landing, because it's informative, it's interesting, and if you're a fan of Stanley Kubrick, which I am, it's really interesting. Now, that doesn't mean that I believe that they didn't go to the moon. I believe they did go to the moon, okay? But I'm still saying that there's some really interesting stuff there to wrap your mind around. So, Brett, thanks for doing that show. How long ago was that you did that?
That show was back in November of 2012, so coming up on 3 years ago, and it's episode 175. The title, it was part of our Logic Saves Lives series, and the title was, Did Stanley Kubrick Help NASA Fake the Moon Landing? I sure hope so. Because This was, of all the conspiracy theories floating around out there, the one that I most wanted to believe. And so we show, and I think we touch on this several times throughout the show, confirmation bias, setting out to do research with the intention of believing what's comfortable in the end. And I just couldn't pull it off. Like, as much as I wanted to believe this awesome story, Ben, I just could not in the end do it. There were too many holes in too many of the conspiracy theories, even though, I mean, and there are different versions of the conspiracy theories, and some are very compelling. But in the end, I had to reluctantly accept the fact that NASA probably went to the moon with the Apollo missions.
And that was
so bummer.
That was kind of what I expected, you know, going into the show. But it was still a fun show, and it was also good. What was the guy's name that initiated all that conversation? It was Sam.
Sam Dotson used to be Free State Project participant and videographer, and he was a host of Free Talk Live for a while. Good guy.
Yeah, and I had I'd forgotten about Sam. You know, it's so easy. Personalities come and go. And I was following along with a lot of his activities in the Free State Project for a long time, and then everybody is so busy. When he vanished, it kind of like I didn't notice right away. And then when I realized he was gone, I was like, "Hey, wait, what happened to Sam? Where's he at? How come I'm not seeing updates?" And it was kind of a little bit of a mystery. And I asked around a little bit about it, and I was never really satisfied with the results of that. So if for no other reason, it was exciting to hear Sam again and hear him talking again and spark back up interest and all of that. But
yeah, and you know what? Sam is actually still in the School Sucks group on Facebook, and he has been taking me to task just a little bit on a recent series I did called Conspirathon with Stephanie Murphy and Brian Sovereign. And we looked at the lighter side of conspiracy. I'm actually recording another one right now with an Australian researcher who wrote a master's thesis on conspiracy narratives. So, and I might bring Sam into the mix sooner or later if he's willing, if he wants to record, because he has some pretty far out there theories about the moon, about space, about the future of the human race. And I would like to be able to, you know, again, more. He's got more stuff that I want to believe, but I just need to see the evidence. So you might actually hear me interact with him on the show, hopefully in the not too distant future.
That would really be cool. I'd like to, I look forward to that. I hope that happens.
For the CIA wiretaps, anything we advocate which is illegal, immoral, or fattening should be interpreted to be satire, meaning its opposite.
You know, a lot of people are so afraid to engage in the ideas of conspiracy theories that they just throw a big wet blanket on all of it because they don't want any of it to challenge anything that they believe. And there's other extremes where people will pretty much believe anything that you hand to them as long as it matches what they want so desperately to believe. And trying to find a balance in between those where logic and science can sort of interact. And sometimes it's really difficult, and sometimes it's hard to find somebody who is not either completely over the rainbow foil hat nutso, or somebody who just screams with their fingers in their ears at the possibility that anything is a conspiracy. And I think in every case, there's got to be a balance of what the truth really is. I mean, you know, technically, anytime a couple people sit down and figure out that they're going to plot to do something or other, that's a conspiracy. And that pretty much is all government and all organizations and all corporations and all groups. So conspiracies are real. It's just that some of the things that people really wrap their brains around and spend so much time on are a complete waste of energy. And where the balance of what you should, you know, spend time trying to figure out and what you shouldn't is, I guess, the magic secret in the whole thing. So where do you find the balance of deciding what to really investigate and what to put some time and effort into, and what to just, you know, just look at and say that is too wacky. I'm not even going to bother looking at that thing. How do you come to that balance?
Well, I don't know. I think that's really a personal choice for everybody, you know, based on experiences, based on what they've been exposed to, based on what they've wanting to be entertained. So these ideas are serving a purpose in society. These theories exist for reason to tell. So, you know, I think that all of these stories serve a purpose in society, in conversation, and I think a lot of it is actually entertainment or people trying to communicate ideas that maybe or fears or concerns, and maybe they don't have exactly the most clear or even honest way to do it. But I think for me, it's because of that they should get, you know, at least fair treatment. They should be at least listened to, whatever they are. And I think that some people, yes, they laugh these things off immediately. And that's unfortunate. What I like to think that I would be willing to do with almost any theory is to say, okay, well, let's talk about it. Like, you know, the stuff that Sam was talking about, for example, a lot of it is like really, really far out there to me. But I wanted to give him a voice, just like I did in that moon landing show. And I feel like whatever it is should at least be listened to, because it opens up and creates an opportunity to evaluate it using logic. You know, is language being used correctly? Are there contradictions? Can we find consistency? Is it being, whatever the theory is it being communicated honestly? What kind of fallacies might be in play? So even ridiculous theories, and some of those might be more like softball logical exercises, are useful in just saying, all right, well, let's get this out there. Let's evaluate it, and let's see if we can go forward with this, or if it's filled with holes already and we should maybe move on to the next subject. So the balance, I don't know. I mean, this moon landing especially is so compelling that it frustrates me when anyone would just say, oh, like we never went to the moon. Are you one of those people? Because there's a lot of reasons to maybe, I'm not going to say believe this, but look at it a little more closely.
We're going to step away to the market. We'll be right back.
And the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Freedom Fiends. And Brett and I were talking before the break about conspiracy theories and about the show that he did on School Sucks Project, specifically about the moon landing. Brett, can you give us kind of an overview, like a 5-minute overview of the basic outline of what you covered on the conspiracy of the moon landing in reference to Stanley Kubrick?
Sure, yeah. What we did was, well, like I said before, we talked about how excited I was about discovering this theory. I was a huge fan of Stanley Kubrick, so the fact that he might have participated in hoaxing the Apollo missions was awesome to me. And then we stepped out of you know, those emotions, and we tried to talk about conspiracy theories using a set of logical fallacies that I think often occur in those conversations. And I can run through the ones that we discussed back then. The first one was the loaded question. In other words, a question that's basically set up with the answer in mind. So it's similar to confirmation bias. Like when somebody goes out trying to convince at large, they are setting out to believe something, and their research is going to go around believing that thing. Another one is stacking the deck or cherry picking. And stacking the deck or cherry picking, which would be selecting certain types of information that is going to lead to the confirmation or the appearance of a confirmation of a favored theory. The appeal to ignorance. And this is like, how could they have gotten to the moon? We don't understand it. Well, that doesn't automatically prove the conspiracy theory that they didn't go or there was some other kind of trickery involved. So those were some of the basics. And we went on to talk about, you know, the importance of understanding the background knowledge or the grammar of that subject. Obviously, astrophysics is massively complex, and I think that that is a big open door for a lot of conspiracy theorists to walk through, because the layperson has so little information about how something like the Apollo mission actually would have taken place, that it's just this giant information black hole that conspiracy theorists could fill in, first of all, with this appeal to ignorance, and then the presentation of what seems like, without, you know, a certain amount of background information, to be some very compelling theories about, you know, motives and all. There are some very, very compelling motives and contextual knowledge that are important. But a lot of things, like they talk about, you know, shadows being out of place or little hash marks on the camera being behind objects when it should be in front of them, most of those things are pretty easily debunkable. And when people, they go out and I think they want to find anything they can that proves their conspiracy theory, and that leads to people being pretty sloppy. And even if there was, you know, some fire behind all this smoke, people are overzealous and they can often discredit themselves because they're trying to glom onto too much to make their case.
You see that quite regularly in the conspiracy theory groups, where I'll just pick on the chemtrail guys for a second. With having the experience that I have had in aviation, working in the aviation field and working for a major company, a jet engine building company in the engineering division, I have a lot of knowledge and experience in that. And when I hear some of the chemtrail arguments that are made that are just so blatantly ridiculous, that it makes me not want to investigate any of it any further, because the part that I do understand and that I know about, they're just walking all over, you know, actual logic and actual experience and actual knowledge. So it makes it very difficult for me to even take the rest of their arguments serious, because I do have enough knowledge in the engineering, in avionics, enough to know that they don't know what they're talking about on some major issues. It's really provides a stumbling stone for me to even investigate the rest of their claims.
Yeah, I can see that. But, that's the thing about a lot of, and I think that frustrates me too, that a lot of conspiracy theorists are just playing on the ignorance of people. And I don't even know if they know that they're kind of playing themselves on their own ignorance as well. And it's just that huge open door that allows all of these theories, from, you know, some that really deserve to be explored to some that are more ridiculous and I think still should at least be quickly evaluated. You know, I think everything deserves a chance. Everything should get its day in court against logic, and to see where it goes from there. But yeah, people can be a little sloppy.
Stick with us through the break. We're going to step away from the market, but we'll be right back on the Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless free market non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. With Ben and Brett. It's a BB day on the Freedom Fiends. Special discount on bees.
Meowing on the weekends?
Say that again.
No meowing on the weekends, oh. I guess?
I don't. You can if you feel to, but I don't. It just.
I need a chorus of meows to really get into it. If it's just me doing it by myself, that seems weird to me to be the only man meowing. So,
I don't want to spend the whole time talking about conspiracy theories because, honestly, there's a ton of good stuff that we can talk about in reference to the School Sucks Project and the great work that you're doing over there. And, you know, some of the shows you've had with Thaddeus Russell and some of the others are just really, really important stuff that people, if they haven't listened to that stuff, they really need to get over there and listen to it because it's... I haven't heard a single one of your shows that I disliked. And actually, any Freedom Fiends fans that are missing hearing Bill Buepert, because he's been away working for a while, anybody who's missing Bill Buepert, get over there because Bill did a couple shows with the School Sucks Project too, and those were excellent shows as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Bill was on the show 5 times. We did a whole series on Stoicism after an initial... getting to know each other kind of conversation. And I appreciate you saying so, Ben. I really do enjoy the study of history. And I've been lucky to have people like, Thaddeus on the show. Thaddeus gave us, I think he's been on 12 or 13 times. And he ruffles feathers, for sure, with people in my audience. He's coming from a different place, ideologically, politically. But he's generated some great debate. And, you know, any opportunity that I have to get him on the show. Thaddeus wrote a book called A Renegade History of the United States. And in that book, he basically puts forward this theory that a lot of the freedoms that we still are able to enjoy in the United States today, we have to thank the dregs of society, the people who are often considered to be the dregs of society, the organized crime, lowly immigrants, drug dealers, hookers, people like that, because they were the ones who were willing to push, you know, when decent, you know, ordinary, good citizen types, they would just let the government roll over them time and time again, mostly throughout the 20th century. But it was the renegades who, you know, stood up for the lifestyles that they wanted. And according to Thaddeus Russell, we have them to thank for the freedoms that we have left. And, one of the things why I think history is so valuable, it fits into what we were just talking about. Being able to look at events or look at peoples or people or even look at a philosophy or a theory or a conspiracy theory and to be able to place it into a historical context is really important. And that was what I was saying about, the Apollo thing, is that when people just dismiss it as a silly conspiracy theory, like our government would never lie to us about something so big. You know, there's a lot of historical context that's missing there. I mean, you know, this was in the middle of an arms race with the Soviet Union. This happened in July of 1969 after a president who had been assassinated almost 6 years earlier had basically promised a trip to the moon, a man standing on the moon, a man from the United States standing on the moon by the year 1970. If you think about what the Apollo mission stood to pacify, as far as like where the public was and where the public energy and public sentiment towards government was at that time. You have a very, very unpopular war going on. You have race riots. You have two of the most inspiring figures of the 1960s killed a year prior in Robert F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And, you have this situation with the Soviet Union where the space race is very much an outgrowth of the arms race. Like, the moon is not a strategic objective in anything that's going on, but the Soviet Union is kicking America's butt all over the space race. And why is the space race important? Because if you're orbiting a planet, there's a very good chance that you could come to dominate that planet. And the Soviet Union was certainly doing that as early as the 1950s. So the U.S., with the help of a former Nazi scientist named Wernher von Braun, and maybe as many as 700 other people who were pulled out of Germany with Operation Paperclip, are involved in this project throughout the 1960s. And, you know, so there's all of these things going on around the rocket just shooting to the moon. Von Braun supposedly wasn't even excited about the moon. He wanted to take the space program to Mars, but landing on the moon was seen as being victorious in the space race, which at that time, I guess, meant being that's why they did it.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to, you know, to look at that situation and see that there was so much expense, there was so much effort, there was so much of a national identity even wrapped up in getting to the moon. And then it seems like once the United States government accomplished that deed, then they just kind of dropped the ball. And then, you know, the space shuttles came along, and I think the vast majority of people don't realize that the space shuttle, none of the space shuttles actually technically went into what's called outer space. They were all orbital vehicles. They were not really, you know, spacecraft. You couldn't have taken one and flown to the moon, so to speak. And then that whole project is dead. And, you know, if you believe what we're told, then the United States is sitting now where it actually doesn't even have a capability to get a man to the International Space Station. We have to rely on the Russians to do that with. So, you know, you can kind of see where there are some weird things there that would make a person step back and wonder about, you know, where is the truth in all this? What does it really all mean?
Yeah, and I think that's why understanding the history is so important. Like, if you just put that event into that time period and you have all those considerations and all those motives for why it actually would be faked, and then you add additional information to that, like the only time anyone ventured beyond the Van Allen radiation belt was between 1969 and 1972. One of the reasons why the Apollo program began is because the Russians had no designs on the moon. The moon didn't matter. The moon wasn't strategic. The only other people who were ever crazy enough to talk about putting anything on the moon were the Nazis, which actually might have been where the idea for the Apollo program came from, was all of these Nazi rocket scientists who had been brought into the United States mostly throughout the 1950s. So I love the story, but the history is very poor.
Now, the bringing Stanley Kubrick into this, there was a whole series. I don't want to do the whole thing. I want people to go and get the podcast from your website and actually listen to it. But I want to tease them a little bit more with this, with Stanley Kubrick, because Stanley Kubrick came out with 2001: A Space Odyssey, the film, right in the same time frame, and many of the things that he did in the film were at least as realistic as what we were seeing on television from NASA. And in many ways, you know, the film was more realistic looking than what NASA was producing. Well, of course it is, because it's entertainment, and entertainment has to be, you know, you put a lot of effort into the way it looks and the camera angles and lighting and all the sound and everything. So to bring Stanley Kubrick into that, and then the magic of this conspiracy theory of saying that the Stephen King movie, that escapes my mind at the moment, what was the name of that movie with all the hints?
The Shining.
The Shining, yeah. That puts a fascinating twist on this, of what was happening in the filming of The Shining, and was there hints being given, and what kind of mind does Stanley Kubrick have? Would he do something like that? And of course, anybody who really has looked very much at Stanley Kubrick, he is the kind of a guy that would pull something like that. It would fit exactly the sort of insane genius that he was. I think that's what I liked about the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it's very compelling. It's a very, very exciting theory. And then if you look at some of the things, there's a movie called The Shining Code. People can find it on YouTube. It's free. And what I think happened is there's a scene in the movie where Danny, who's the boy, the son of Jack Nicholson, he is playing with trucks on this rug. People say the rug is actually the shape of the launch pad in Florida, where the Apollo sting kindly, it almost looks kind of crudely sewn, and it says Apollo 11 on it. And once he stands up and, you know, he's in clear view of the camera, it clearly says Apollo 11, he walks to room 237, which is the approximate distance of the Earth to the Moon, 237,000 miles. And after that, he will not speak. And this is bizarre because in the book, it was room 217, but Kubrick changed it. And in fact, a lot of Stephen King readers were angry with, maybe not with Kubrick, but they really kind of panned the film because it made so many bizarre and seemingly unnecessary departures from the book, The Shining, that King wrote. So yes, there's a lot of intrigue there. For sure. But, you know, the other thing, too, that's worth considering is how much of a fine-tooth comb has been run over this whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, people are looking for this compelling topic. And if you just think for a minute, like, or I guess if I think for a minute, like, what would it be like if that scrutiny was applied to my life? You know, where people just searching through my history with magnifying glasses and spying on me. Like, what could they find out and what could they uncover? Like, Brett Bonnot claims to be an anarchist, but here he is on August 16th, 2015, standing in line at the DMV to renew his driver's license. And here he is 10 days later at the Brentwood, New Hampshire town hall paying $110 for a car registration. I think that there has been just such a tremendous amount of combing through all of these details and looking for connections where there might be some, but in many, there's more to this story, I think, for sure. I definitely think there's more to the story of Stanley Kubrick, and there's more to the story of the Apollo missions. I mean, remember, the Apollo missions were based on something that was for a while a conspiracy, the bringing of these German scientists to the United States to not only work on things like NASA, but also to work in American universities, to bring that ideology to the United States, which also fuels conspiracy theorists because it's like, oh, you know, the Nazis, they were really into faking things to sway public opinion. And you've got hundreds of these guys working on this Apollo program. Who's to say one of them just didn't decide to say, you know, let's do this in a soundstage instead? So, ooh, right?
Intrigue and mystery on the Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Wrapping up the first hour, talking about, are the moon landings fake? Well, we're not really talking about that. We're talking about the possibility that there may be something there. And mostly what I want this to be is a teaser to get you to get over to the School Sucks Project and download the podcast that I've been talking about where Brett talks about this topic. And not only that, but like Brett was saying also, it's really important to know how to process this information and see where fallacies lie and see if you're, you know, confirmation bias can really throw off your thinking. And also, sometimes it's just a natural human thing to try to look for patterns. Now, you can see this as an example when you just look up at clouds. You lay on your back in the middle of a nice green field, and you look up at the clouds rolling by, and you see rabbits, or you see dragons, or you see elephants, or you see whatever your mind wants to see, it will see in the shapes of those clouds. And sometimes it will see things you're not expecting. But the thing with your brain is that it constantly looks for patterns. Now, this is a self-defense tactic. When we were, you know, hiding around in bushes and you didn't want to get eaten by a lion or something like that, we have very good vision for mammals, you know, considering that we're mammals, And so we would look out, and we would need to see things like not only movements and shapes off in a distance, but we would want to be able to see what that shape was. Is it a threat? What are its color variations? And you would need in a natural setting to be able to distinguish, you know, is that a lion coming at me or is it a gazelle? Is it dinner or am I going to be dinner for it? And so the human brain has developed that capability to be able to look and see certain patterns and recognize them with things that you already recognize. And this is very valuable for us too, even in gathering, and not only in the hunting and staying non-hunted, but in the gathering as well, as you're looking at different plants and you're trying to see patterns of leaves to see if something is poisonous or if it's familiar. And so it's a very important part of your brain that seeks patterns. The problem is that life in the 21st century has so many complications now that if you're not careful, you can see patterns where there are no patterns, just like those faces in the clouds or just like the bunny rabbit in the clouds or whatever. And I think that's really one of the things that throws a lot of people off. And also, you know, if the more you look at the federal government or pretty much any government, the more you can see that there is nothing that the human brain can come up with that would be so evil that you can't put it past what these monsters would do. I mean, if they would incinerate whole cities full of people like, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and if humans would do the kind of things that humans have done to each other, then why wouldn't there be some of these conspiracies? But even at that, I don't know if you've done any work on this, but Brett, have you ever seen any of the conspiracy theories that don't believe that there's ever been any nuclear reaction that's taken place and all the atomic bombs were faked? Have you seen that one yet?
No, but I am intrigued. Now, what do they say is the motive for faking all of that? I mean, I think I can guess a little bit, but tell me more, please.
I haven't really investigated it. From the one person that was attempting to get me to look into it was saying that it was basically a fake show to scare the Soviets and scare the rest of the world into folding and into obeying us and making them spend massive amounts of money to catch up with us when really the U.S., I keep saying us, it wasn't me or you, but to try to say that the U.S. had faked those things in order to force the Soviets to spend a lot of money and I don't even know. I didn't go beyond that. I just laughed at it and pushed it away. But I thought it was a pretty funny one. And then there's always the flat earth people, and there's a bunch of these that are floating around out there.
You know, that's interesting. The first one, the flat earth, actually, that's probably my limit. The flat earth, I don't do. But the first one you mentioned, it has its roots in actually quite a bit of interesting truth. Throughout the 1950s, the U.S. government ran a project through the CIA called MKUltra, and in the 1960s, it was streamlined, meaning that I think that a lot of the projects they were initially trying were scrapped, and they just focused on what was actually producing results, and it was transformed into something called MKSearch. And then there were later incarnations and sub-projects as well. It was very much this game with the Soviet Union where it's like, oh, hey, we're using psychics. Hey, we're going to the moon, you know, and going kind of back and forth and trying to psych each other out. So there's actually some truth at the roots of that.
We're going to break for the hour. And when we come back in the next hour, we're going to talk more about the School Sucks Project and how to set your mind and your children's mind free.
My fellow sheep. Election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government?
then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
This is hour two of the Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's ion cannon mounted atop the Wormabago Mobile Studio in the depths of Smuggler's Bayou, where the swamp is alive with a thousand eyes, and none of them work for the NSA. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. And you can learn more about that at bipcot.org. That's BIPCOT.org. I'm Ben from badquaker.com, and joining me by way of Fiend Phone computer satellite technology from the future is Brett from the School Sucks Project. Brett, welcome back to a second hour Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition.
Ben, it's great to be with you. This is my first Weekend Fiends, so I'm excited about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I really wish I could have got to Porkfest this year. You guys really kind of did a, man, it was like one of the shows that you guys did there was, I'm trying to think of a performance of a musical performance. It was kind of like, what was that, Wagner, Das Rheinhold, where it's like a 16-hour, you know, a-thon or whatever. That's quite the show you guys made.
The Dawn of Freedom you speak of.
Yes.
It was a regular installment of the Freedom Fiends, which was total seated time of 2 hours. We took a brief break, and then we did 4.5 hours. So we were recording Davi, Derek, MK, and myself until the sun came up. And I'll tell you, next year, we are going to outdo that for sure. We are going to do an even longer Dawn of Freedom. So what that means, we're going to have to find a way to keep recording even when people come in and insist it's their turn to use the LRN studio in the morning, which is what finally brought the Dawn of Freedom to a close last Porkfest. So whether we need mobile recorders or we need to be able to switch to another setup right away, we will keep the Dawn of Freedom going longer in 2016, that's for sure.
Literally until Broomhilda bursts in full metallic armor and begins to the final singing of the end of the show.
Yes, exactly. Or until a completely sober person, I think we all were, passes out. Because it was interesting, Ben. We were so energized after we recorded for so long. We all got off the mics and we said, well, we're going to bed. But no, we didn't. We walked around the campground. We went out to breakfast. I stayed up for 40 straight hours.
Wow.
You know, it was very, very energizing. It was a spectacular experience. So I look forward to it.
And, you know, anybody that hasn't made it to Porkfest yet, I just want to encourage them. I did miss it this last year, but it is really a hoot. It's a lifetime experience that everybody needs to have at least one time to get to Porkfest. It's up there with, well, it's the anarchist. It's been said over and over. It's the anarchist version of Burning Man, but that really doesn't do it justice. It's really its own thing.
Absolutely. There's a little thing going on in New Hampshire, actually, this weekend called Burning Vermin. For those who are familiar with Vermin Supreme, the presidential candidate, he's hosting his own fest at the Bardo Farm, which is, it's not as far up in New Hampshire as Porkfest is, but I think they're expecting a few hundred people to show up there. It's actually going on right now. So, yeah, come to New Hampshire for our fests. And there's another one, Liberty Forum. that happens in the winter, towards the end of the winter, beginning of spring. That's a good one as well. It's not the same as Borkfest. You're going to need maybe a tie, maybe a clean pair of shoes. you're going to be expected to take showers. It's a little more formal. So, yeah, I encourage people to visit and see what's going on here. I grew up in New Hampshire, but I've been here and participating in the Free State Project since 2010, and I've made some of the dearest friends of my life during that time.
And anybody who's not familiar with Vernon Supreme, and don't take this as an endorsement because I don't endorse voting of any kind, but Vernon Supreme promises, absolutely promises, and I believe him, that if he's made president of the United States, everybody gets a pony. Everybody gets a pony. Now, how can you have a better platform than that?
It's about time, Ben, you know?
And he makes just as much sense as anybody else who's running. So, I mean, if you're going to vote, why not waste your vote properly on somebody like Vernon Supreme rather than on somebody, he makes as much sense as anybody. So,
now, I would take him to task a little bit on his mandatory toothbrushing law, because I think, you know, there's a lot of room in there for abuse, like just saying that it's going to be mandatory that people brush their teeth. You know, how long before, you know, big toothpaste or big toothbrush teams up with the government and they it starts out like, hey, you know, we're just trying to help. We're just looking out for everyone's dental health, brush once a day. But, you know, before you know it, it's gotten the way of so many government initiatives that just wanted to help people. And it's completely corrupt. And it's expanded to, you know, a 10-time-a-day brushing law where people have, you know, no enamel left on their teeth. They've got like multi-hundred-dollar-a-month toothpaste budget, especially if they have a family. So I think that needs to be fleshed out a little bit better before I would vote for him. Like, what is this mandatory toothbrushing law all about, Vernon? That would be what I would ask.
So. Oh, Brett, you're just falling for that old fallacy, the slippery slope argument. You're just taking this way out of context and too far. Vernon Supreme would never force toothbrushes on everybody. He would always be a kind and gentle ruler.
Some people call me a cynic for not trusting politicians, but I think it's safer that way. I think it's safer to just be a little skeptical of these people.
I do agree. Exactly. Now, on a more serious note, anybody who doesn't really, maybe you weren't listening in the first hour, maybe your area doesn't carry the first hour, whatever. If you haven't gone over to schoolsucksproject.com, you need to do that, and you need to download some of the shows there and really get familiar with Brett's work there and what he's trying to do. Brett, a lot of times when somebody sees something like, well, you know, it's called School Sucks Project. What are you, 12 years old? Or, you know, their mind might go in that kind of a direction. So give us a little bit of your background and where you're coming from that you could have the unbelievable audacity to say school sucks. How can that possibly be?
Well, sure. In addition to spending the mandatory 15,000 hours, roughly, except for the time that I cut class in government schools between the ages of 6 and 17, and kind of walking away with that conclusion that school sucks after that experience, I also spent about 10 years working as a teacher and a tutor, and I heard kids tell me that over and over again. School sucks. This sucks. Why do I have to do this? This work sucks. And that phrase definitely stuck with me. And then as I started to become more liberty-minded, I said, well, wait a minute. School does suck a whole bunch of resources away from productive people and dump them into this giant and pretty inefficient and ineffective bureaucracy when it comes to really educating people. So it's sucking resources away from, you know, places and time in a time when a lot of other exciting, more enriching, and more efficient educational alternatives could be taking its place. I actually named the show while I was contrasting a personal experience with a professional experience. I had young nieces and nephews. I thought they were filled with energy and curiosity, and I was tutoring 16 and 17 year olds for the SAT, and they seemed drained and unenthusiastic and not very curious and not very creative. And, you know, the difference between those two groups was, you know, a few, like 10,000 plus hours of public schooling. That was the most important part of the title, School Sucks, is what it sucks out of people, you know, just from the process of being there so long. It's really, really spirit crushing. So I hope people will stick around long enough to get that explanation. Like if they stumble upon the website, it's all explained there. Why I called the show that. I also thought it was good marketing. Like back in the day, I pictured, you know, a bunch of kids. We'd have like a store, and a bunch of kids would be walking through their schools with like, you know, school sucks water bottles. But merchandising is a real pain in the butt, and it doesn't really produce a lot. So we did do T-shirts, and we'll probably do that again. But I'd be more of a brand, and I'm not saying it never can be, but. Yeah, it was also for marketing, even though I think it is a true statement in what it takes out of people and in the resources that it takes away from the growth of other options educationally.
I think just about anybody who's really honest with themselves will realize that almost everything, and this is no groundbreaking statement, it's been said over and over, almost everything that you learn in school is useless. There's some basic stuff about how to read and how to communicate and how to write. And there's some stuff like that that, yeah, you learn in school. But who's to say you wouldn't have learned that some other way anyway? But the vast majority of what regulated, government-mandated, you know, school where you have to go and get on the bus or whatever, and you go there and you spend all day, and then they fill you with homework that you have to spend half the evening working on if you ever complete it at all. The vast majority of that is nothing but a time kill. It's babysitting. And to the child, it's a 12 or 13, according whether they go to kindergarten or not, it's a 12 or 13 year prison sentence that they did nothing to deserve.
Yeah, and it's taking away so many opportunities. Like all this work is thrown at us, and we don't really remember any of it. But what could we have been, you know, gaining knowledge-wise outside of that experience? And you know, just to speak to that a little more, here's an example from my life, and this is well into my career of doing the School Sucks podcast. Maybe like 3 years ago, I was watching a group of adults in my family grill my nephew, or really kind of antagonized my nephew about, he was maybe 12 at the time and he wasn't doing well in school. And they're all saying, school is so important, you know, this is the most important time of your life to take things seriously. And I was like, oh goodness. So finally I said, okay, here's what we should do. We shouldn't just be like saying these things. We should all go around the table and we should tell this boy what are, aside from basic reading, basic writing, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, the three most important and valuable things we learned in public school that we still use today. And there was silence, right? And I was so proud of myself that I burned everybody, you know. But I really was happy that I was, you know, sincerely able to come to the rescue of my nephew. And he understood it. Because, you know, what I internalized from that whole experience is just like something was wrong with me for not doing well. And, you know, that's not the case. It is very much the system that's flawed.
It is the system. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom. So much truth, it hurts is one of our taglines. I like to say we're holding you down and pouring truth, molten truth, into your ear hole. And for some people, criticizing school is kind of like that. It hurts like you're pouring something molten into their ear. But the fact is, there are some serious problems with school in the way that Americans have come to accept school in the nowadays in the 21st century. What we call school is something called the Prussian style of school or the Prussian type of school. And Brett, I know you've talked about this. I know you are more of an expert on it than I could ever hope to be. But explain a little bit about where that came from and how it was that American schools took on such a, I hate to even call it Soviet style, because it was Soviet style before there was a Soviet.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was the middle of the 1800s, and I think there were a lot of concerns. Some of them were religious. Some were more about the changing complexion of the population of the United States. And what a lot of the intellectuals were looking for was a way to systematize that changing population. And several Americans, and there were also some British, they started going to Central Europe, which was, you know, today what is Germany, but then the Kingdom of Prussia, and they started issuing these traveler's reports, they called them, kind of praising the Prussian model of schooling, which was very top-down, not student-centered, not student-directed at all. It did a great job of inculcating obedience and a relatively new concept of nationalism, basically putting the state before self, which was very useful, especially if you are trying to expand your territory through military conquest. The actual discussions about developing a schooling system in Prussia began after Prussia suffered a series of embarrassing military defeats to Napoleon, and they were kind of pushed back away from territory that they were hoping to get into. So one of their intellectuals, a philosopher, and I use that word loosely when talking about this guy, his name was Johann Gottlieb Fichte. He was one of the first to issue one of these quotes that we've heard also from people like Lenin, like, give me a child when he is small and I will mold him into what I need him to be, you know, that kind of a thing. That it was Fichte who said something like, we will basically remove free will, right? Which is great for them. I mean, free will really stinks if you're trying to win a battle militarily, like the Battle of Jena that Prussia lost to Napoleon, when you've got guys who are getting shot at and their, you know, rational self-preservation response is to drop their weapons and run away. Like, yeah. Why are these strangers? I don't have any problem with them. Why are they shooting at me? So nationalism fixes that problem. The inculcation of obedience and conformity addresses those military shortcomings quite nicely. And, you know, a lot of these guys, they justified it when they brought it here. I mean, they understood that the Prussian system was fairly repressive. And it was Horace Mann said, yeah, it's got its problems, but we're America, we're great, and we can surely use it in furtherance of our Republican institutions. That's almost a direct quote, but it is a paraphrase. So that was how it came here. Once it arrived in the state of Massachusetts, it was adopted by surrounding states and it quickly made its way across the country. So that is the introduction of the Prussian model to the United States in the from like the 1860s to the 1880s.
And a lot of people don't think about things when something new is brought in like this, and it's a government-mandated thing that ends up going everywhere and taking over everything, and then a couple generations go by never having seen what it was like without that thing, and this can be anything pretty much, the highways, it can be, you know, air traffic controllers, it can be anything. When a couple generations go by never seeing how the market fulfills that need, only seeing that government is fulfilling that need, then it sort of evaporates from the mind of people that there was ever a time that the market itself fixed that problem and filled that need. There's just the general assumption that, well, the government's always done that, and before the government did it, we didn't have it at all. And that's just not true. Mm. There was education. There's been education. You know, in the days of Benjamin Franklin or whoever, there were schools, but there was also essentially what we now call homeschooling, but there was also community schools as well. It's just that when this Prussian model came in as a top-down authoritarian thing, it was really about teaching people how to either be factory workers or cannon fodder.
Indeed.
We'll be right back with a little bit more on this topic. Stick with us.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. So, Brett, we were talking a little bit about the history of the Prussian style of schooling that was adopted in the U.S., and we didn't mention, you said a couple names, but we didn't really say that it was this was a progressive's, I wanted to say a toy of the progressives, but it was really a foundational thing that a lot of the progressives in the late 1800s understood that they couldn't really get any of their bigger agendas fulfilled until they captured the minds of children. That was the groundwork that they could build this progressive empire upon. And so step one is in capturing the minds of children, because once you've done that and you've taught people not to think, and I think that's the main thing school does today, is it teaches people how not to think. It teaches them how to memorize certain facts and then spew them back out on command. School teaches kids to sit still, wait for permission to do anything, eat at a specified time, not when they're hungry, go to the bathroom when they're allowed to go to the bathroom, which is completely unnatural, and not talk to each other, which again is completely unnatural, and not interact with other children of other ages. So it takes kids who are all 5 years old, puts them all with other kids who are 5 years old, and they never interact with kids who are nine. And it takes kids who are 9 years old, shoves them in with other kids who are 9 years old, and they never get to interact with 5-year-olds or 15-year-olds. And because of that, they never really learn how to grow up. So what you actually have is a whole generation's being produced of children who are now in their 20s, who have never really interacted. They get out of school and they're dumped into life, and they've never really had a chance to interact on an adult level. Whereas in the olden days, a kid, by the time they were 12 or 13 years old, they were oftentimes doing some kind of an apprentice work, at least for a few hours a day, to start to pick up not only a skill, but also they were interacting with adults on a regular basis. Not just sit, be quiet, keep your head up, stay awake, don't ask questions, you know, don't fidget, we'll pump you full of drugs if you make a fuss. Not like that, but actually interacting with people. And I think that's a real thing that a lot of people are starting to come to grips with today, that there's a problem in modern schools of just forcing kids to sit there stagnant, don't think, don't move, repeat what you're told, and take your test, and we'll get everybody through this test, and then out the door you go to the next level. And break me out of that.
Yeah, Brett. So nothing... Yeah, well, no, that's true. I mean, like I said, the three hidden lessons of school, and this is one of the first things I ever talked about on the podcast. Number one, obedience, which we talked about in the previous segment. Number two, conformity, which I mentioned. And those two lessons produce, I think, a third lesson, which I would describe philosophical apathy, right? So there's, if you're just trying to fit in, there's not much left to really get excited about. Like, you can't really be your own person. You can't really be an individual. So much of your time is stolen from you that could be spent, you know, exploring your own areas of interest, following intrinsic motivation. Excuse me. School is an extrinsic motivator with its grades and report cards and stickers and you're a good boy or you did a good job. Kind of stuff. Those things about doing like an unschooling or homeschooling portfolio at the end of each year, instead of four report cards, which is how you know, somebody else's educational in air quotes experience is summed up. There was a video I saw. This woman, Lori Couture, she's like an advisor for homeschooling and attachment parenting, and she said, you know, one of the things that we like to put in our portfolio is business cards of adults we meet. And I was like, wow, you know, that is so cool.
Yeah.
To be able to be like 6 years old, 8 years old, 11 years old, and you're out interacting with adults who are actually doing stuff in the world instead of just being told what to do by somebody who, you know, I'm nothing against teachers. I know a lot of them are doing their best, but they went to 12 years of school, they went to 4 to 6 years of college, and then they went back into school.
Yeah.
Right? So do they have families? Do they deal with real world concerns like paying bills or a mortgage or, you know, other kinds of hobbies or interests? Sure. I mean, they have lives, but they spend most of their time in a world that isn't essentially real, right? The world of school. So those are the people that we're kind of trusting as you know, parents who put children into these schools to be mentors, to be inspiring. It just doesn't work. And because of the forced nature of school, it creates like really adversarial relationships between students and teachers. And then in turn, and this is what I saw from tutoring, and one of the reasons why I actually got away from academic tutoring, even though it was fairly lucrative, there's enforcers who are going to be needed outside of the school. Well, the top enforcers outside of the school are the parents, and that fractures family relationships, you know, because they have to say, well, do what the teacher says, do your homework. Well, right. You got in trouble, so you must have done something wrong. So, you know, that's not a really nurturing relationship. Plus, mom pulling Steve or Jessica out of bed at what, 6:30 in the morning and saying, get dressed, eat, get on a bus, and then hovering over them at night. Did you do your homework? You have to be in bed by 10 so you can get up at 6 the next day because, you know, you need at least 8 hours of sleep, even though somebody your age should be getting 10, but there's nothing we can do about that. I can't put you in bed, you know, at 8 o'clock. And that's not healthy. And I felt like I was part of that not healthy kind of interaction where I would show up at somebody's house and I'd be like, hi, I'm here because you're not good at school and I'm being paid to make you better at school. So that's a relationship that's set up to fail. And I got to say, I was pretty cool and I was pretty understanding, but I just felt like a lot of the time I would get sorted into the same category as here's another adult, you know, trying to tell me what to do. And that's not a good start for a relationship that was really about, I hoped, helping this young person have a more positive
educational experience. If anyone's ever worked with young people or worked as a teacher, that feels really good to be efficacious toward that end. But because of the momentum of the whole school experience, it didn't seem like I was getting enough of those opportunities. Like, I felt like I could do really cool stuff with kids, but I was just, like I said before, enforcing what the demands of the school were. And that sucked.
We in the first hour, we played around a little bit with conspiracy theory stuff and moon landings and other things. And it was mostly lighthearted in thought. And so what I'm going to kick out now is in that same way. It's lighthearted, and I'm not seriously saying this is a case. But if I were a conspiracy theorist on this level, I would look at it and I would say, you know, having a system where for 13 years, 12 and a little bit more, a person is in school full time and it's all, you know, quote unquote free. And then you're expected, if you're going to have a decent life, you're going to need college education. So now your next step when you get out of high school, you have no direction whatsoever given to you in those 12 years. So here's your next direction. Go to college or go into the military. And you go into college thinking again, well, I'm doing the right thing. But what you're actually doing is racking up $30,000, $40,000 in debt that you haven't been taught in any way how that kind of debt works and how it eats at you and how you're going to be enslaved to it for years. And then you get out of college and you're not really prepared for what life is going to be like. If I were going to build a conspiracy theory about that kind of a thing, I would say, yeah, clearly those bankers and those university presidents and those university professors that were bringing in the Prussian method to the United States and putting it in with the consent of the politicians in the 1800s, they planned exactly this to happen so that you would all be indebted to them forever. But I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so...
So Noam Chomsky said something not too dissimilar from that, actually. And he said that, and again, super paraphrase, but forcing people into essentially this debt slavery. And I understand debt slavery is strong language, but when you care about your credit score and you're saddled with $40,000 in debt, you got to work.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do 40, 50 hours a week. Maybe you like your job, maybe you hate it, but you've got to go. And what Chomsky said was this is basically producing inaction in ways that are actually meaningful. Like, people are not going to have the time to do what's politically, culturally, socially, philosophically, because they're just grinding away to pay off their debts. And other debts build on top of those as well.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. And I've had that experience with people when I've tried to address things that are going on politically or things that I was concerned about, you know, the larger direction of the society or the country. And they say, yeah, Brett, that's great that you have time to think about it, but I've got a mortgage and I've got kids and I've got bills to pay. And, you know, I guess it's good that there's people like you who can think about these things, but that's not, you know, that's not me. And I feel for those people. And, you know, I lived most of my life like that, actually. You know, like, I was working a lot and working really hard until, 2006. And, you know, then I started to have more free time. I started to have more time at work to actually, you know, kind of struggle. And then I got an iPod, and then I started, you know, like, found Free Talk Live and a bunch of other libertarian shows and was reading audiobooks while I painted away and got paid. And that's like the best job, let me tell you. But as a side job, I mean. And the world changed from having the time and I guess having the interest to pursue those things. So, you know, I wish more people were able to do that, and I wish I could have given that advice to more people. But if I used to work as a college consultant where I would actually help, you know, one family keep up with the Joneses, especially in some of these really competitive school districts, like, where should Steve go to college? And let's look at these colleges. If I was honest, when I saw that Steve didn't know what he wanted to major in, it didn't seem like he had a whole ton of motivation. All right, well, maybe you should at least take a year off. That wasn't an option. That was not an acceptable suggestion for me as a college consultant to make. I, again, was there as the enforcer. You go to college. You know, that's what you do after high school. This is the 13th grade. And yeah, I don't know. I'm really conflicted about my college experience. I'm glad I went. I'm glad I had the experiences that I did. Those experiences certainly pointed me in a certain direction, but man, it was an expensive route, you know, to take. And if there was another way to do it, I would have liked to have found it.
Yeah. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, F-E-E-N-P-H-O-N-E.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
So in trying to bring this about into a positive message and having some redemption in the final act here as we wrap up the second hour of Freedom Fiends, I would just really encourage anybody who has a kid who's getting close to that age where they're thinking about college, or maybe they're real close to graduating high school, you know, really seriously, there are many options. And there's not one answer for anybody, but I would really encourage people to just slow down a little bit and think about things. Think about whether you really need to saddle that kid with 4 or 6 or even 2 more years of school, and whether or not the finances are there to do it, or if you're going to saddle them with debt that they're going to be fighting with for years to come. Also, you know, for younger families, I know when my son, the oldest of my kids, was fourth grade when I took them out of school. And it was scary. It was terrifying. I was in Nevada. I was really philosophically opposed to what was being taught in the schools. And I was very uncomfortable with it. And I didn't know if I could do homeschooling or not. It was very scary. And I didn't know if I could afford homeschooling or not, because I knew I had to buy all these materials and stuff, and there's all these curricula. And I didn't know if I could do it. It was terrifying. And the really scary part is that not only might I fail, but I might fail for them. And that really puts a burden of responsibility on a parent. But we did it. We jumped out there. And my wife supported me. She had a regular 8-hour day job. I was running a private business, so I had a little bit more flexible schedule. And we just took the chances, we took the risk, and we did it. And then immediately we figured out within, it was within probably 3 or 4 months, I figured out that the homeschooling curriculum that I was using was almost worthless. And we had to develop our own way of teaching the kids how to do stuff and interacting with them. And then it was like my eyes opened. And we started doing field trips to the State House in Nevada. We started doing field trips to the Sacramento, to the State House in California. Started watching how politicians worked. We started, you know, watching news shows together and discussing when the television was intentionally trying to brainwash us with a news show and when it was just entertainment. And I started to understand my kids way better. And I'm very proud now to say that I am the father of three dedicated anarchists. They are successful. They are successful in their lives. They lead normal lives. They're not all crazy, you know, out there getting arrested or anything like that. They have three very different lives, but they're all happy and they're all normal and functioning. And we did that in spite of public schools and in spite of the struggles of homeschooling and non-schooling. And there wasn't even a name for unschooling back then. We just knew that homeschooling wasn't working out, and we weren't going to shove our kids in public schools.
Right. Yeah. You know, perfect segue into my final point of this installment of The Fiends. People need to get the word schooling out of their heads and out of the mix, right? So schooling is Prussian in origin. Schooling was a tool of progressive intellectuals and academics and socialists. Schooling sucks. So trying to do something like school at home is going to be counterproductive, I think, if your real concern is having your children learn. You know, like, learning is living, and that's what you described. There was just all the schooling process. Things would get better, but that didn't work. And then when, you know, more freedom was brought into it, then you started to see real change. And I know that that's scary. And I think that's a lot of people feel that pressure as parents, people who are unhappy with the schools. They say, well, I can't do what the school does. Awesome. That's great news. That would be terrible if you did what the school does. So people, and I understand why there's that lack of confidence or lack of belief in oneself, because these are people who went to school too. So stop thinking about schooling and start thinking about learning. And I'd say you're on the right path as parents.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and there's so much out there to learn. And kids, given the opportunity, like to learn. It's schooling that pushes them down. It's schooling that holds them back.
Amen.
Brett, thanks so much for coming on the show with me on this weekend. I hope we can do this again on another weekend.
Absolutely. I'm also known as the Sardine of Doom in Fiendsland. So I don't mind being referred to as that as well. What's your name, Ben?
The Bearded Possum.